And now I thought that I might just go very briefly through a sketch history of the Indian system leading up to the Buddhist tradition, which you'll be hearing about in the next 2 weeks, and then say something about the principle of yoga through which the mind is to be opened up in its dimensions of experience to come into touch with this realization. As I said, the Indian tradition begins about 2500 BC in the old Indus Valley culture world. It's at that time that two cities suddenly appear in the Indus Valley, Mohenjo-daro and Harappa, with the style of life that we know from Crete. This is just about contemporary with the Cretan world in the West. Over here we have the Indus civilization, and over here the Cretan civilization, and they're exactly contemporary. And the symbols are essentially the same. Now, the script of the Indus has not been translated. We don't know how to read it. But we do have a great many symbolic figures on the stamp seals of this tradition. The first of these is the bull. This is a very important figure in the mythologies of the whole world. The horns of the bull and the horns of the moon are equated. The moon is that celestial sphere which dies and is resurrected, and it carries its own death within it. The principle represented in the moon is that power of life which conquers death. And the bull becomes the symbol of that. And the bull becomes the sacrificial animal because the moon is the sacrificial planet. Another animal that sheds death is the serpent, which sheds its skin to be reborn. And the serpent is also a symbol of the moon, as the bull is. The serpent is fluent, and it lives in waterways and so forth, and is bound to the earth, and represents that power of the spirit that is bound to the earth. But its little flashing tongue is like a flame, so it's as though there were fire within it, the fire within water which fertilizes and fructifies and gives life. Now, contrary to the sun, to the moon, is the sun. This is the blazing light that never dies. Wherever the sun goes, the light has gone. And the sun represents thus the eternal light, which does not die. And this, of course, is the light which, if experienced, burns out life, as the sun burns out vegetation. So the interaction of these two powers, the solar power of sheer light and the lunar power of modified light, modified to life, is one of the great mythic themes. And as the bull represents the moon, so the lion represents the sun with its solar face. And as the sun pounces on the moon as the moon dies, so the lion pounces on the bull. And the eagle or hawk pounces on the serpent. These are basic mythic pairs. And so you get here two kinds of immortality. There is the immortality of the one who dies and comes back to life. That is the world of the fathers. The ancestors are supposed to live on the moon. The other immortality is that of the one who has gone through the golden sun door and will never return. He has left his body, so to say, burnt out this side of the sun. The idea of the reincarnating principle is thus of two orders. One, the reincarnating principle that puts on bodies and puts them off as the moon puts on and puts off its like body. And the other, that principle of sheer light, which never dies, which is really the light that is incarnate in all. Now, one of the aims of all these mythologies, of all these high culture religions on this side of the line, is to realize one's own identity with that light. We look up here, and here are these, I don't know what to call them. I'll call them just bulbs. They're not bulbs, they're something else. Each one carries the light. Now, we can think of this as many bulbs. And this is the world of multiple entities. On the other hand, we may say it is one light. Now, which is correct? This bulb breaks, we take it out, put another in. What's important? Is it the bulb or is it the light? Now I look down here and I see all these heads, like bulbs. And within them is consciousness. What's important, this particular head or the consciousness that's in it? If we are interested in the bulb, in the head, in the individual, we have the attitude of affirming the individuals. Now in Japanese, the world of the individuals is called the G or individual Hokai or universe. And the world of the one light is called the Re Hokai or the one universe. There's simply two ways of talking about the same thing. The goal of these religions is to get you to shift your accent from here to here so that you identify yourself not with the bulb, the head, the body, but with the consciousness. And when you have identified yourself with the consciousness, you have identified yourself with consciousness, and you were never born, and you will never die. The next stage of experience is that of no division between consciousness and the unity of the individual. These are simply two modes of viewing one mystery. And this then is called G-Re-Mu-Ge. Individual, universal, no division. Finally, this is the great one, G-G-Mu-Ge. Individual, individual, no division. We are all riding on one karma. We are all manifestations of one great being. This is the doctrine of the so-called flower wreath, also of the so-called net of gems, as though the whole universe were a great net with a gem in each of its points of juncture, each gem reflecting all the others and reflected in all the others. And the accent is on what is reflected, not on this specific gem. Now this shift of accent is what is implied and ready to be known about in these mythologies of the sun and the moon. Look on many an alchemical drawing. Look on many an oriental icon or tanka. And you'll see in the two upper corners, the sun and the moon of equal size. That's the moment of realizing the identity of the G and the Re principles. Now the next point, in these seals, there are not only bulls and lions and things of this sort, but there are certain plants. And it's a plant of a very specific kind with a heart-shaped or spade-shaped leaf. This is the leaf of the tree under which the Buddha sat, the tree known as the Bo tree or the tree of illumination. Now this tree is regarded as what is called the immovable point. It's that point in the center of the universe around which all things revolve. Where is it? It is at that point in your own consciousness where you experience neither desire nor fear. Where those moving principles have been quenched, you go back past the I, back into that sphere of being beyond the thought of I, which was antecedent to the thought of I, which brought about desire and fear.